Welcome to this February 2024 edition of the Arizona Highways Podcast. We are excited to have you listening. With Arizona Highways editor Robert Steve, I'm Steve Goldstein. If you didn't hear our January podcast, I'd encourage you to go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and search Arizona Highways. We had a great conversation on that podcast about bats in the Grand Canyon as part of an issue of the magazine devoted entirely to the canyon. Coming up in this edition, photographer and filmmaker Dawn Kish is our guest. She'll be telling us about taking images of Lake Powell with a very special twist, and we'll present that conversation in a few minutes. But first, let's welcome Arizona Highways editor Robert Steve to the podcast. Robert, how are you?
Hello, Steve. Thanks for joining us again from the driver's seat.
And this is our chance to talk about your editor's letter, which, of course, I always get a big kick out of. In the February issue of Arizona Highways, this one has a remarkable history with the magazine somehow caught up in the middle of the Cold War. So I'll leave it up to you, but I was thinking starting in 1955 and what happened then.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, every place likes to think they've got their little stories, but this is a real story. And what happened was, you know, after the war, we had the Cold War. And the first news we got of this was in the 1950s, where we had gotten a letter from a gentleman in Tucson who used to be sending, who used to send copies of the magazine into East Germany. And then he got word that they were all being confiscated. Anecdotally, when people would talk about this, you know, shop talk around the magazine, everybody took it back to the 1960s, you know, which is when it really, you know, became a story.
The New York Times followed up with the story as well. So, I mean, based on even the couple of conversations we've had, Highways was making a lot of national and international news here.
Yeah, what happened was the Soviet government, which obviously had a lot of input over East Germany and other places in Europe, determined that Arizona Highways, and the quote from the Russian or from the Soviet publication was that Arizona Highways was ideologically subversive, and that we were producing provocative literature that was clearly intended to conduct hostile propaganda among the Soviet people. And that's a direct quote from the New York Times. So the New York Times had gotten word that this was happening and that we were being banned.
So were there specifics in all the research you've done as you're preparing for this big anniversary book you're working on as well? Was there something specific other than these images couldn't possibly be right? Like if you think it's dark behind the Iron Curtain, hey, maybe come to Arizona.
Well, I think it's as simple as that. I don't know. I mean, you think about everything that was going on in the world at that time that, you know, somebody somewhere in some dark building in you know, in the middle of the Soviet Union decided that, you know, of all the things they had to do, this rose to the level of becoming an issue, and somebody actually took the time to slap a ban on Arizona Highways. It's interesting because the New York Times came out with the story and sort of broke the news, and we got a flood of letters from people all over, and I still have handwritten letters from different contributors and different politicians from around the country. But what really then sort of took it another step was there was this columnist named Inez Robb, and she was, you know, all over the country. She was, you know, a big player back in the day. And so she wrote a column. As it turns out, she had a winter home here in Arizona. So she was very biased in our favor. So she wrote this wonderful piece. And the way she phrased it was like, well, to be honest, that stuff doesn't really look real. And it's like, if Americans don't even believe this is real, let's go easy on the Soviets. Joseph Stalin was a subscriber to the magazine. Now, he didn't pay for that. That we had this subscriber somewhere that sent subscriptions to Harry Truman and Joseph Stalin. So maybe single-handedly he was trying to work on world peace. However, Stalin's daughter was a self-paid subscriber. So, you know, there's your little ironic twist.
Well, that led me to my other question about one of your legendary predecessors, Raymond Carlson, who mentions that in one of his columns, but he also said something else which I thought was sort of funny.
Yeah, he actually, when he was asked about the ban, and I actually wrote about that in my column, and he said that, you know, it just goes to show that our little magazine gets around. And then he said, frankly, I'm delighted that the Soviets have placed us in the same league as Robin Hood and Disneyland. So, you know, he was sort of tongue-in-cheek and modest about it, but that's our little play during the Cold War.
That's Arizona Highways editor Robert Steve. I'm Steve Goldstein. This is the Arizona Highways Podcast. Coming up, we'll talk with a photographer who has some very unique perspectives on Lake Powell and Glen Canyon. Stay with us. And welcome back to the Arizona Highways Podcast with Editor-in-Chief Robert Steve. I'm Steve Goldstein. Dawn Kish is a photographer and filmmaker. She took on an incredible assignment in 2022 to go to Lake Powell and Glen Canyon and follow in the footsteps of legendary photographer Tad Nichols. Her documentary based on that assignment, Tad's Emerging World, Glen Canyon Exposed, will be shown at the Sedona Film Festival at the end of February. And Dawn is with me and Robert. Dawn, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So question for both you and Robert, as I'm cheating, making the co-host answer this too. Who is Tad Nichols? Why should we know about him?
Well, I can tell you from our perspective, Tad is one of those legendary photographers, and we have a fairly long list of them. So as it relates to Arizona Highways, Tad Nichols was he was a geology and archaeology major at the U of A, actually, and it's a great story. He was so unimpressed with all the photos in his textbooks that he decided, with only one class in photography at the U of A, decided to go out and make better photographs. And in Arizona Highways, most of his early stuff was archaeological. So he would go to, you know, different prehistoric sites, and he photographed a lot of that stuff. And although, you know, the first photograph he did with us was a sheep herder up on the Navajo Reservation, and he did one, you know, this beautiful shot of an aspen tree up by Flagstaff. And I'll hand it off to Dawn in a second, but in 1950 is kind of when he discovered Glen Canyon, and spent the next, you know, until the lake formed, he was up there photographing, and that kind of leads into where Dawn comes in.
Yeah. So Dawn, what inspired you about what Tad had done?
We have a mutual love for photography and a mutual love for the land. And, you know, Glen Canyon in the 50s was still around. It wasn't buried by Lake Powell. So he loved that canyon, loved the river, loved photography. And so he spent 13 years documenting Glen Canyon. And when he did that, he did, like Robert was saying, he did some, you know, documentation of, you know, arc sites and things like that, but also creatively, he was superb. His work just spoke to me. And it's his book, Glen Canyon, Images of a Lost World, was just embedded into my head when it came out in 1999. And I was like, is this Glen Canyon, the Glen Canyon that Katie Lee's been talking about all these years and all these, you know, river runners, you know, Glen Canyon was a thorn in our side. We would never want to go see this place that got drowned by Lake Powell. So even though Lake Powell's gorgeous in its own right, but Glen Canyon is even better. And he knew that. And he kept going back and back and documenting it and creating these beautiful images, these beautiful black and white 4x5, 35 millimeter, 120, all kinds, and doing motion pictures as well. When I saw his work in his book, yeah, it spoke to me, and it just reminded me, like, he was like the Ansel Adams of Glen Canyon.
So I love the concept of you writing him a letter. And I know there's a lot to that. I know there were a lot of ideas you had that you put together, and ultimately it ended up in Arizona Highways. But can we talk about that concept first, the idea of writing a letter to him, just telling him how inspired you were and how you wanted to follow in his footsteps?
Yeah, I guess I'm old school. And I really enjoy the written word still. So when I started this project, I kept a journal. And I also went into the archives at NAU and looked at his journals and looked at, you know, Katie Lee's journals. And, you know, I just kind of dug into this project to figure out who he was, because I didn't really know him. I just knew of his work, right? So his beautiful photography. So as I was going through this project, I started just, you know, writing in my journal, but then all of a sudden when I went back to look in my journals, when I was starting to, look at the project as a whole, I saw these little glimpses I was writing to Tad. And then I was like, oh, how could I form this and be creative and but have a very heartfelt way of telling a story that you don't really quite see anymore, and so I just started writing letters to him, and it just made sense to me. It just like it poured out of me better. It was more heartfelt, and I think he would relate more to a letter being written to him, than an email.
Well, Don, that segues perfectly into asking about the equipment. Richard Jackson got you Tad's camera, and that seems like a big part of this project. What was it like to, when someone's as talented as Tad was and as you are, and did anything sort of come through that camera in some sort of spiritual way as you were using it?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question. I like that question. There are moments, many moments where I just would ask him, please guide me, because that place, Glen Canyon is gigantic. Lake Powell's gigantic. And it was just such a big project. Like I only scratched the surface on the images that I did for Arizona Highways. And in fact, I went back and back and back and back and back and back to document it more, because I just felt like I needed to. Just the 4 days that I was on assignment just wasn't enough. When I was out there taking photos, I asked him, like, please guide me. And then every time I would take a photograph, I would kind of like do this breathing thing. I don't know how to describe it. It was kind of like a little mantra I was kind of doing. And then I would breathe in, and then I would release the trigger on the out breath to be there to channel, to go slow, since it is film. And a lot of people are used to digital now, but I was so interested in taking the slow approach to this project. And the crew would be like, oh, okay, what next? And I'm like, I don't know. I have to wait for Tad to tell me. And then the crew would be like, and I say, oh, it's a Tad moment. And they're like, is it a Tad moment? And I'm like, yeah, let's get the stuff, And they're like, oh, it's a Tad moment. Go get Tad. And so and they were always asking me, is this a Tad moment? And I was like, yeah, it's a Tad moment, or no, it's not a Tad moment, And so there's this definite, channeling him for sure.
I have a practical question, and I think about when I'm out hiking for the magazine and taking photographs with my iPhone. Were you at any point like terrified that you were going to drop this camera? And not that things can't be repaired, but I mean you're holding, it's sort of this one of a kind item. Was there any nerve factor
Many times.
there?
Yeah. When Richard offered me the camera, we were actually doing another project together, and it was a bigger camera. It was an 8x10 camera, and unfortunately, that kind of fell through because of COVID. But during that time, he brought this 4x5 camera out, and he goes, "What do you think of this camera?" I was like, "Oh, that's nice. Yes, yeah, it's very cool. Crown Graphic. I love it." And he's like, "Well, would you want to borrow this, for your project?" And I was like, maybe. And he goes, it's Tad Nichols. I was like, what? T Tad's Nick Tad Nichols camera? How did you? Why do you have? Why? What? And I go, that's a relic. It should be in a museum. He's like, I got Tad's camera before he passed away. We became really good friends. I was his printer, and he gave me this camera, and I would like you to use it if you want to. And I said, well, to be honest, I am paranoid that I would ruin it and drop it or break it or whatever. And he goes, well, if you change your mind. And then a couple years went by, and then the lake level started to drop so fast in Lake Powell. One night, I think at 2 a.m. in the morning, bing, I knew I wanted to go back and document Lake Powell, but I didn't know how. And then all of a sudden at like 2 a.m., I remembered Richard asked me if I wanted to borrow Tad's camera. And I was like, Whoa, this is gonna be good. I'm gonna borrow that camera and I'm gonna go back in. I'm gonna go back in Glen Canyon and document it with the same camera. At first, though, I was gripped, but then I realized Tad would have been so honored that my mindset really did change. And of course, I padded it with bubble wrap and I was making sure that that thing did not, get ruined. But to be honest, like those Crayon graphics, they're pretty burly. I mean, they were made to go out in the field for doing documenting, in the field. So
Right.
that thing had no leaks. The lens was old. And so I did replace the lens with other lenses that were sharper.
Don, I may be going down the spiritual path again, but there's a quote at the end of your documentary that from Tad that says it was just like a paradise, a Garden of Eden. Could you feel what Tad shot decades earlier, the feeling that it was like a paradise, like a Garden of Eden?
I barely scratched the surface of that canyon compared to where he was. There are these little tiny glimpses, though, of pure beauty that are the above the lake level that I have just had discovered. I can't really say like it was a Garden of Eden because because all that is still underwater. But there's these amazing side canyons, like with red rock just curving around and like almost like you feel like you're in a maze. And then another canyon with the famous cathedral in the desert was out, which is a beautiful waterfall. But I'm sure maybe back in the day it was probably a waterfall with like monkey flowers around it. And I mean, I saw little glimpses of maybe what he saw, but overall he was down at the river's edge. And unfortunately, I was not. It was still 100 to 200 feet in certain places below me. But what I did see, I'm telling you, man, probably the most beautiful canyon I've ever seen, which is kind of crazy.
In the piece that we published, the one image that really brought me almost to tears, literally, is that shot from height where you actually could see the river again. And for all I know, that's covered up again at this point. I don't know. But can you talk about seeing the river in that context after it had been covered up for decades? What did that feel like?
Wow, what a special moment. So yeah, the river did return about, yeah, but it was about 10 miles that we rode from height, and then until we hit the lake, till we hit Deadpool. It was a challenge. The river was not acting like a normal river. There wasn't trees and bushes and flowers along the sides because it was just mud everywhere. You're kind of climbing up and over these big silt banks and mud bogs. And it was just like pretty intense. You were trying to find that beauty by going through this really strange landscape. It was really bizarre. Some things were coming back, like I saw those little sprigs of cottonwoods coming out. It was like, ooh, you could tell, like, ooh, here it comes, here it comes, but it's all underwater again. All the photographs that I have done that I did, except for Rainbow Bridge, are all underwater. And I mapped all of them on my iPhone where I took them. Like I took GPSs of every place where I took photographs, and they're all underwater again.
That is longtime Arizona Highways contributor Don Kish. Her documentary, Tad's Emerging World, Glen Canyon Exposed, is going to be at the Sedona Film Festival at the end of February. Don, thanks for joining me and Robert on the Arizona Highways podcast.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you calling and getting the Tad word out.
Back with the editor-in-chief of Arizona Highways, Robert Steve. Now, Robert, you obviously were a big part of the shaping process of what Don was talking about, in particular, those letters to Tad. This is a massive project that she took on, and then making a documentary out of it as well. How do you approach these things differently? Because obviously you have a magazine that has some major feature pieces in it, some essays, obviously incredible photography, but also some that are just sort of like, hey, if you happen to be in Prescott, here's a great place to go. How do you balance that as an editor when you get a certain kind of pitch, I guess I would say, when you're thinking, yeah, I definitely want this to sink our teeth into, but maybe for this issue, we need something different?
Well, that's a great question. And this was very much out of the norm for us. This was from an expense standpoint, and we ultimately couldn't do it on our own. And so Dawn went out and got some underwriters, and we mentioned them in the magazine, so they got the appropriate recognition for, you know, their help in making a really important project take place. But yeah, it was a big project, and it took place over a long time, and there were, you know, different players involved. Richard Jackson, who she talked about, the great printmaker, a longtime family member of Arizona Highways, and getting Richard's involvement. So there were a lot of moving parts, and our photo editor, Jeff Kidda, fielded a lot of those phone calls. But ultimately, this was, you know, for a cause that we thought was really important in the big picture. But for our subscribers, you know, we knew they would be, you know, blown away by the photographs, not just because of their artistic quality and you know, the professional approach that Dawn took, but our readers are so used to seeing Lake Powell images. They've seen these places, you know, over the years, to see it in this context was an important piece, first and foremost, for our readers.
Well, for our listeners and also for Arizona Highway subscribers, I'm asking you to take us behind the curtain again a little bit, because I think people could tell based on our conversation that Dawn is an interesting kind of person. Like, she's unique. What is that like to work with her? And also someone who, I mean, I suppose photographers for highways are not exactly just like run of the mill, but what's it like to work with someone who truly has a kind of a defined personality, character, and drive how she wants it to go?
Oh, it's great, because, you know, she has this infectious enthusiasm. And frankly, a lot of landscape photographers are sort of quiet, you know, they live literally in their campers on their pickup trucks 300 days a year, waiting for the clouds, you know, to move in and to get some action in the sky to make those photographs so great. So there is sort of a more introverted quality to a lot of landscape photographers. Dawn, of course, has shot everything for us. She's a tremendous, you know, portrait photographer and lifestyle photographer and landscape. She's actually rare in the fact that she can wear so many different hats. But, you know, her enthusiasm is great, because, you know, she'll point out things that we might not have thought about. You know, it's like, oh, I wouldn't have thought to do it that way. And, you know, and she doesn't take no for an answer. So, you know.
So finally, as we've talked about, magazine hitting a really important anniversary, you've had subscribers from all over the world for so many years. How does that work with photographers? Are these people often who are Arizona folks, or sometimes they people who had come in and they're so amazed by what Arizona is and they want to contribute as well?
Historically, another great question. Historically, there were a lot of photographers that would come in, because, you know, when the magazine was starting, there just weren't a lot of people here, and there weren't a lot of roads here, and so there were a lot of photographers that came from other places. And then once, you know, they saw what Arizona Highways could do from a production quality and was on par with, you know, Life Magazine and National Geographic, it was a great opportunity for them to showcase their work. Very happy and proud to say that we have no shortage of, you know, tremendously talented men and women photographers and young kids. I mean, we've got, there's a great pool of photographers out here, but we still have some that come from out of state. One in particular, Claire Curran, who comes over from, she probably knows more about Arizona than most Arizonans. She comes over from California, and she knows exactly where to be when the leaves change in the fall, and she knows where to be for those wildflowers in the spring. And so, you know, we welcome photographers from everywhere. But fortunately, the vast majority are good old Arizonans.
Well, Well, that'll do it for the February edition of the Arizona Highways podcast. We hope you'll subscribe, rate, and review. You can find Arizona Highways any of your usual podcast places, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And the music for this podcast provided by Epidemic Sound. For Robert Steve, I'm Steve Goldstein. Thanks for listening.